Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. Coming to you as normal via the wonders of the internet, despite the far from normal times we're living in. Of course, there are more important things to worry about than football at the moment. However, dodgy sound quality aside, we will strive to help you pass the time as you engage in social distancing. On this week's episode, I'm joined by Danny Law, Jamie Durrant and Andy Skinner to talk through Aberdeen chairman Dave Cormack's stark warning about the financial implications of Scottish football's coronavirus shutdown. Sound check, please, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey, Ryan.
How's it going?
Good. Thank you, Andy. We'll also discuss the trailblazing Highland League's decision to call time on the 2019-20 campaign and award Brora Rangers the title. But before that, we're joined today by Scotland women's national team captain Rachel Corsey, who joins us all the way from Salt Lake City, Utah, which she is in isolation after returning there from Scotland's Pinatar Cup success in Spain. Rachel, how are you and what is the situation like in the United States at the moment?
Hi, guys. Yeah, I think I've got one day left of isolation, but over the last few days, I think everyone's been shut down into that now, so it doesn't look too good for the coming few weeks. I think it's pretty similar here, in line with what was announced last night or yesterday by Boris Johnson and the implications for the UK. So that's pretty much been my life for the last 12 days, and it looks like it's going to continue.
So what's been the sort of chain of events, going from obviously a success at the Pinatar Cup with Scotland and Spain to travelling back to the United States and then going into isolation? How has it all played out in sort of real time for you?
Yeah, it's been an unforeseen few weeks, I would say. I think the Pinatar Cup was obviously really great. It was the first time, I think almost to the day, it had been 4 months since I'd played a competitive game. So I think I absolutely thoroughly enjoyed my time in Spain. We were pretty isolated. Obviously, things in Spain at the moment are fairly severe and sad to see. But where we were pretty separate, and we had our own sort of training facilities right in where the hotel resort kind of was. And the games obviously went really well. 3 wins was huge for us. And I think as much as I think with the opposition you might have expected that, we still had to perform, and a lot of us have been in an off-season kind of period. So that was really promising. And then the expectation, of course, was to come back to Utah and hit the ground running. I think I was going to be about 5 days late for pre-season. So I think that's normally when things start to get pretty tough and there's a lot of running involved. And sadly, we've all just been indoors and kept away from that. I think the day I literally landed in the States was, I'm not sure how much this is fed back home in the news, but there's an NBA team here in Utah called Utah Jazz. And it was an hour before I landed in Salt Lake City, the two players who are two fairly key players here in America were announced as being diagnosed. And for those who know American sport, you know, the NBA is an absolutely enormous corporation that's existed for a long time, and they're really the trailblazers, and they were the first to shut down. And I think once they shut the league down and teams weren't allowed to train and things like that, it was inevitable that all the other professional sports follow suit, and that essentially did in the hours and days that then followed when I first got back.
So was your isolation, was it government mandated as opposed to just your club saying take a bit of caution?
Initially it was more of the club. There was guidelines from the government, but at that point it was fairly chaotic. There was a lot of information being sent out, and it was kind of hard to know what was actually being regulated and what was a government imposed sanction or what was a club wide situation. But essentially I landed late on the Wednesday, and I think I'd literally jumped in the car, gone to get coffee, had just got back to my apartment, and a person who's head of our medical sort of staff called me and said that I wasn't to leave the apartment again for the next 14 days, as much as possible, unless it was obviously anything that I really felt I needed to do, and otherwise I was to stay at home. And if I was to need anything or have anything brought to me, then I was to just reach out to them, and they would make sure that I had everything I needed. So yeah, that's pretty much how it's looked, although I'd say whilst the government protocols probably got a little more intense, they have kind of allowed us to do a little bit of training, so I have actually managed to get outside, although it has been in very isolated instances.
So has it been training with other members of the team, or have you been sort of on your own?
So there's been, within our club, I think we have 8 players who play for their national teams. So the 3, or now 2, who played for the US, they've remained, they're obviously still in the US, but they're at home, so they're not even in Salt Lake. And then there's 2 other Canadians who they've now shut the Canadian border, so they're also at home and stuck in Canada for now. And then there's 2 others who are, one plays for New Zealand, the other one plays for Iceland. Obviously, we played Iceland in Spain. So the 3 of us have been allowed to train together whilst also taking the appropriate measures and being 6 feet apart. But those 2 are my only sort of respite from being totally on my own and only having FaceTime to see other people and hear other voices. But obviously, you know, it's a severe time, and there's a lot of people worse off than we are. So, you know, we should be grateful for that.
I mean, we're only kind of like a few days into this now, but kind of how jarring has it kind of been to having to almost shut yourself off from the rest of the outside world?
Yeah, I think it's really hard, because I think when you're someone who likes to be outdoors and active, to then have to just all of a sudden stop doing those things, I think the biggest challenge is mentally. You know, you use, as much as exercise and training is your job, it's also, as a lot of people understand, a huge kind of release of anxiety or stress or whatever other emotion it might be that's kind of building up. So I think that's the biggest challenge. And then obviously when you feel within yourself that you're healthy and you're fine and you've no symptoms, you kind of have to go through that fight with yourself of, I could just quickly go out, or I could just quickly run and do this. And I think that's something that I think a lot of us find really easy to want to try and do, and you have to work really hard to fight that sort of craving to go and do something that would be normal life, because ultimately that's how this virus has spread. It's people trying to do just normal day-to-day things and not realizing that that's actually the reason that this has spread to so many different places all around the world. And it's getting really, really, really serious, and obviously back home and here.
Rachel, what's your reaction to the news in the last hour or so that the Olympics have been postponed? Because obviously you and some of your Scotland teammates, I guess, would have hoped to have been part of that as part of Team GB.
Yeah, I think it was inevitable, really. And I think Canada were the first team to speak out, but I think the stance they had was really brave and bold and admirable, because I think, of course, it's a huge event, and obviously it wasn't something that was a decision that could be made quickly, and there's a lot of repercussions and a huge amount of work that needs to now go into how that's going to look if it does go ahead, whenever that may be. So I understood why that wasn't something that was made, a decision that was made that quickly, but I'm glad it is a decision, because I think there's absolutely no way it could have been done in a manner that would have put everyone's lives in a safe environment. It would have definitely put everyone at risk. And then just from on a different note, sort of from a competitiveness level, I don't think any of the athletes could have possibly been close to at their best. And I think on these stages, you know, you want the games to go ahead, and but you want the athletes to perform. You know, you want it to be a showcase of the talent that's there. So hopefully this will now allow it to actually go ahead at a time whereby it can be a great celebration of sport all around the world.
Just to kind of get a sense of the difference where you are and where we are in the UK, what's the panic buying been like in America? I know you mentioned in your column this week that toilet paper was like gold dust over there, and it took somebody from the club to go and find some for you and deliver it to you as well as your food, because you weren't prepared, obviously, with just having come back.
Yeah, it was. I think, to be fair, it's been pretty similar to what it's like at home, from what I understand. I know that. I think eggs, milk and flour were the hardest groceries to get a hold of. And actually, strangely, onions. I didn't realise onions were such a key to cooking, which probably is more a reflection on me than anything else. But
I was going to say pancakes, but pancakes don't work for me.
Yeah, I kept them out of my pancakes this weekend. I think to be honest, things like toilet paper are still hard to get hold of. A lot of people have stocked up while there and continue to keep stocking up. But I think the initial panic perhaps was last weekend. The shops were pretty sparse, but I've got food in my cupboards, so I'll be okay for the next few weeks.
You discussed earlier that you'd obviously had your off season, you'd come back to the UK, you'd then go back out to Utah for a little bit, went away with Scotland, kind of got back into the swing of things again, 3 games of football, although I don't think you played the first one, did you? So it was 2 games of football, maybe? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so, I had a bit of a travel issue, but yeah, 2 games.
So you've been off for, 4 months, back for 2 games. Now you're facing sort of 4 months off again, potentially. I mean, on a non-serious note, you must feel a bit like Andy Carroll. But how frustrating is that?
Yeah, it definitely is frustrating. I think I personally felt that, before I decided to take the off-season as a break and not play anywhere, I think I was pretty exhausted at the end of last year. And so sort of at the end of the month, I just enjoyed having that time to just kind of not unravel, but allow my body to kind of have restart all over again. And I kind of enjoyed the January, February period of really building up, working really hard. I was at a point where I was just really excited to be back in that team environment. And so I think, yeah, that's really disappointing because now, you kind of question, you're like, oh, I wish maybe I had played in the off season or maybe I should have done something different. But of course, I know that I made the right decision in the moment. But yeah, it's difficult to kind of look ahead and think, wow, I've got another, you can probably, I would say, think that at least 6 weeks of isolated type training before there's any likelihood that there might be some team training even allowed. So I think, yeah, it's going to be tough, but we're all in the same boat. And I think that's maybe what can be the encouragement. You just have to accept that this is the way it is and no one chose it to be like this. And you just need to make the best out of the situation, which of course there's days where that's easier than others.
Rachel, you'd say you're sort of coming towards the end of your 14-day self-isolation.
Yeah.
What are you going to be able to kind of do once that ends? You touched on it there, that might be sort of isolated training. I mean, what exactly would that involve in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think my circumstances will remain fairly similar. I think more than anything, a lot of the other girls were probably more scared to be around, or at least the three of us that have come back from Europe. So I think maybe it's going to put their mind at ease more than it will do anything for us. But for now, we will still be allowed to go outside again, as long as it's in. I think they're allowing it up to 2 to 3 people with certain distances between you all. I think for now, that's still permitted. So for the next however long they allow that, then that will be how training will look. It'll be, there's a high school that's fairly close to where we stay. So at the moment, we're using that as our facility to try and get some exercise in. Otherwise, it's circuits on my balcony to try and keep some sort of, I don't really know if that's doing much for me other than just passing an hour of time, but that's ultimately how the best of the current situation that we've managed to kind of set up.
Is the US women's club game in a similar situation to every other club game around the world in that you don't really know when it's going to start? If it is September, given it's sort of summer football for you guys, and you're facing the prospect of a season starting 5 months late, and there's still loads of Euro qualifiers. I know Scotland were supposed to have 4 Euro qualifiers in the next couple of months, I think. Do you see the potential that the women's Euros, like the men's Euros, could also be pushed back a year?
Yeah, I think I hadn't actually thought of that, but I know that there is concern over the international windows and the time that they have at the moment. Obviously, yeah, there was 2 games in April that have been postponed for now. And then the next 2 after that were early June. So it would be fair to say that they look unlikely to go ahead as well at this point. So to fit in another 4 games in what's already a very tight and packed calendar could affect that. I think with the men's Euros being pushed back a year as well, I think that was already going to have a knock-on effect on us. You know, they wouldn't look to have those running at the same time. So I think we're definitely going to see some impact to that tournament. I don't know if they'll push it to just later in the year or how UEFA will decide is the best way to accommodate all the games. And yes, from a league perspective, at the moment it's an indefinite period of stoppage, I suppose. And we're kind of working on a 2-week update as we go. So right now we're told that as things are, that will remain until at least the 5th of April, at which point they'll provide another kind of set of protocol, which I would imagine will look fairly similar to how these next 2 weeks will look, but we'll wait and see.
Presumably for advocates of the women's game like yourself, it would be, as you said, a negative to have both tournaments on at the same time next summer, in the sense that you want the women's tournament to be on its own so it can garner the most attention possible.
Yeah, I think for that, yeah, it's something that we would want to be on in an exclusive period. I think if there was a way though to have them almost doubled up, so there wasn't perhaps a full year in between them, then there actually could be some benefits from that. But I think it's just better that they are separate. You know, I think if you're someone who's, for me anyway, I want to watch the men's Euros, I want to be able to enjoy that. And obviously if we were in competition at the same time, then you would probably miss elements of that you could otherwise appreciate. And I'm sure that works both ways. I know that UEFA wouldn't run them at the same time either. And I know that they're fairly set on that. So I don't think that would be something that would happen. So it'll be interesting to see how that looks. And there certainly will be changes in the calendar. And there's going to be lots of changes. And we just need to keep working through them and adapting as we're able to kind of make them. And at the moment, the circumstances are that we don't know when things will start to be able to be back in operation. So there's so much that remains an unknown, which for most of us is probably the hardest thing. I think dealing with bad news is something that's tough, but you know, once you know it, you can sort of process and work through it. Whereas at the moment, we're still in this unknown stage, and that can be quite stressful. And I know that there's a lot of girls here and a lot of girls at home who probably feel quite anxious about all of it.
As you mentioned there about kind of dealing with all this, I mean, have you been in contact with kind of your folks back home and they're kind of checking in with how you're getting on?
Yeah. Sunday obviously was Mother's Day, so I spent most of the morning and an early afternoon on FaceTime to home and just catching up. My mum's a nurse, so obviously that's stressful in itself. But I think having been in the States for the last five and a half years, you know that reaching out and making time to have phone calls back home is kind of the best and only way to keep in touch. And that's something that I feel both my family and friends, we do a really good job of making sure we have time for that and we check in on one another. And so, it's going to be an important part over the next few weeks whilst everyone's in isolation. It can be easy to just isolate yourself and get stuck in that kind of routine and rut of being on your own, but there's things we can do to help one another and be around each other even from afar now.
In your Evening Express column this week, you told a more positive, upbeat story about meeting Rafa Benitez when you were away with Scotland in the Star Cup.
Yeah.
How did that all come about?
His team that he now coaches in the Chinese Super League were staying in the same hotel as we were. And I think they'd been there for a long time. I think their plan was they were going to spend their pre-season in camp there. And that obviously then they were affected by the virus that at the time was fairly intense back home in China. So they'd stayed for an extra period. And I think Shelley Kerr had phoned me just before I'd flown to Spain to kind of say that firstly that team was going to be there and not to be alarmed that there was a Chinese team going to be in the hotel. I think that was at the point where the sort of concerns around the virus were starting to to reach back home, and a few players had to express that they were a bit concerned just generally about travelling. And so she then said, but Rafa Benitez is here, and I've met him in passing and whatever else. And at the time I was like, okay, that's cool, that's fine. And then I think it was sort of the second last night, we hadn't crossed paths that much in terms of like the players from either team and the coach and staff. You know, we were quite separate. We had our own schedules, our own kind of meeting rooms, our own eating areas. And I actually missed the initial part. We'd been at dinner, and then I left, as most had. And as I came back sort of late in the night, I think I was just coming back to get some hot water to make a cup of tea. There was like 7 or 8 of the girls were still sat there. And apparently he'd been there for at least an hour just telling stories about sort of the Champions League and individual games that he'd played. You know, he spoke about Gerrard in quite a lot of detail, talking about how when he was younger and how he had to play him in different positions to try and help him understand the game, and how when they played Everton, you know, you just couldn't control him. He just had this passion that you'd tell him so many times that you needed him to keep calm. And I think there was one game he got sent off in like the second minute, and he just had so many stories, just had so much detail, and it was just, it was really interesting. And a lot of the girls literally said that the stories they'd told him, they'd learned more in that sort of 60-minute period than maybe what they'd learned in the last 5 years playing professional football. And yeah, it was just a really interesting guy. And he stood for another, you know, I came in sort of an hour and a half after he'd started speaking, and I probably stood or kind of sat there for another hour, and he just continued. And I think he could have kept going for the whole night. He totally had captured the audience, and it was a one-off unique experience. It was one of those moments where I don't think many people expected to perhaps almost have that kind of starstruck feeling. But as he started to tell the stories, you just kind of appreciated all the things he'd achieved and his knowledge. And yeah, very, very, very impressive.
Okay, that seems as positive a note as any to finish this section. Right, so when we come back, we'll discuss Dave Cormack's quite stark statement about the Dons' finances in the wake of the coronavirus shutdown. Okay, so yesterday, Aberdeen released a statement from Chairman Dave Cormack that sort of dealt in the specifics of how hard coronavirus and the shutdown as a result of coronavirus will hit Scottish clubs' finances. Obviously, he's in the position to speak about Aberdeen. He said before the shutdown, the Dons had £1.5 million in the bank, no debt. But they're now facing a period that if it goes on as long as the shutdown is expected to go on, they're facing £5 million in outgoings. And he's gone from seeming quite confident when he came in to do the pod a couple of weeks ago and heard about the shutdown while in the studio with us, to giving quite a dire warning about tough decisions on the horizon with no season ticket money, kit sales, things that usually come in at this time of year.
So I think it's a strong statement from Aberdeen. I think they've done the right thing in sticking their head above the parapet, because a lot of football clubs can be quite reticent when it comes to saying that they've got any issues with financial problems. But Aberdeen, like every other club, couldn't have foreseen this sort of eventuality. So I think they're right to outline to the supporters and to put a bit of pressure on the SFA and the SPFL to come up with a suitable resolution to this problem. But yeah, I think Aberdeen have done the right thing to come forward and outline how difficult this period could be.
I think they're a club in the past that's obviously taken quite a bit of criticism for their communications and PR strategy, and so I think we've experienced that firsthand. But I think you've got to give them credit on this front, because I mean, say, I imagine as supporters and players, you'd appreciate that kind of honesty. I mean, it's not going to make good reading for anybody concerned with Aberdeen, but you'd rather them come out and say, look, this is the problem that we're facing, this is where the money would be going, and this is why we're not having it. And I think they'd appreciate that rather than the club just shutting up shop and say not saying anything at all, which again, when there's nothing coming out of a club, that's when kind of like speculation's rife and inevitably kind of starts to circulate, and there's nothing kind of positive emanating around that. And I mean, we don't know say how long this situation is going to go on for. I don't think you'll see football back in Scotland before the autumn time, which again is a long period of time for some clubs, or most clubs even, to survive without any income through the door.
In terms of, I've seen people discuss yesterday on social media, obviously season tickets are still on sale. You think the diehard Dons fans that always buy season tickets could still buy them and that money could still come in. Is there also the potential that they could just release the new shirt anyway in the hope that the fans, out of goodwill and out of commitment, still purchase it and they still get a bit of that money coming into the club? I know prize money and things are still up in the air. We'll get onto that in a minute. But there just seems to be some of those revenue streams could still be open.
But then you don't know if the season's going to resume this year or not. So kind of releasing season tickets now, you may not get football before December. So there's kind of like half the season gone. And it's the same with the shirt as well. How much are you actually going to get to see the shirt? Is it going to get played in that much? So I can understand why maybe they wouldn't issue kind of any of those things just now.
Yeah, I think in terms of that, I think it has got potential. You know, you could do something like that to try and boost some income. But then I also think there's a lot of people who probably feel a little bit of that financial stress. In terms of, I don't know that anyone has too much spare cash at the moment, given there's so much uncertainty over so many different things within, you know, local businesses, local communities, jobs, things like that. I would go back as well, though, and just say that I think by coming out and being very open, I think it was almost a win-win situation. I think it was a clear and concise sort of statement that you made that was very easy to understand. And I think off the back of just what we've heard from a club, you know, like Hearts, where I think a lot of that story broke through the media and through different outlets before it actually was official within the club. And I think it's when you run into sort of situations like that really makes a lot of people across the entire organisation very, very uncertain, uneasy. You lose some trust. And when you start to kind of go into those types of difficulties, then you get sort of people making decisions and reactions that aren't probably in the best interests overall. So I think it was a smart statement to make. I think it was probably a fairly obvious one. But as you say, it's good to be transparent and upfront. I think going back to earlier, people can handle, or people can learn to cope and process through bad news or not great news. But when things are thrown on people and it's a surprise and it comes from the wrong sources, that's much harder to kind of cope with.
I think the other issue when it comes to trying to sell season tickets early is that we don't know the shape of the 2020-21 season at the moment. There's been a suggestion of possibly a 33-game season, but it really is going to depend when we're able to finish this season, if at all that happens, and then how the picture looks for the following season, because it may not be 38 home games. It might end up being fewer games than that, trying to make a more shorter, concise season. So that's a big issue that comes when it comes to trying to sell things like season tickets early.
I was surprised that there's still been no resolution in terms of how the SPFL season is going to end. I know we're still holding on possibly to this hope that there'll be some way of finishing the campaigns, but if you take the Highland League, which we'll move on to in a minute, they've clearly taken the position that they don't want to affect next season by leaving the games from this term that have been delayed, open-ended.
It kind of gives clubs at that level a little bit of clarity as well. I mean, prize money is not really as much of an issue at that level, but I think player contracts, and they're kind of more prevalent at that level because players kind of move about a lot more often. And I suppose for clubs, it's kind of getting those players tied down or having an idea of what squad they're going to have for the following season. I think there's maybe been a lot of clubs in the last couple of months that have done some business in terms of tying up players beyond, say, next season or even further on than that. But particularly for the smaller clubs, there's not kind of then any kind of uncertainty and hanging on as to when football's, like when this season's going to resume. They can kind of hopefully get some kind of planning in place and try and source some alternative kind of revenue streams.
Rachel, do you have an opinion on how this season should be brought to an end, whether it's taking the league tables as they are, having promotion but no relegation, declaring the season null and void, or any other of the multiple suggestions there have been?
It's a tough one. I can understand why they've delayed making a clear decision, because I think there are implications for a lot of different teams, and with those implications, you know, there is a lot of differences, certainly in sort of the financial side of things. So it's not something that can be, you know, a quick and easy decision. However, in saying that, I think probably they need to come to a conclusion on that, and they're never going to know if they've made the right decision or not. But I think the right thing to do in the next at least 2 weeks would be to make one, so that everyone can get to terms with that and work through it. I think for me, I think the biggest impact is on teams who are relegated, and I think it's harsh to put a blanket statement and say if you're bottom of the league right now, then you're relegated. I think perhaps would be fair is to involve some kind of playoff that would involve those teams and allow them perhaps at least one game or two games, however that would work out, to decide on the future. But it's hard. It's hard to kind of say black and white.
So maybe we'll have the clarity that we all desire in the next 2 weeks. Next up, we've touched on it already, but we'll discuss Brora being awarded the Highland League title at the weekend. Over the weekend, the news broke that the Highland League, after a meeting of all the clubs, had brought a close to this season because of the uncertainty over the shutdown, unanimously voting to award leaders Brora Rangers the title. Andy, you've spoken to all the key players in this. What was their take?
They were a bit shocked to win the Highland League by this kind of means. It's obviously not, you know, the normal way that you'd find out you were champions of a league by virtue of a WhatsApp message by your manager. But I think it's maybe just a measure of how convincing Brora have been in getting to this position, that the member clubs all met up on Saturday and agreed that the season should be cut short and Brora should be awarded the title. It was Fraserburgh who tabled the motion in the first place, and you know they had the most realistic chance of catching Brora. So I think once they made their stance clear that they weren't going to be in any way sort of awkward and dig their heels in about the number of points that they could have clawed back potentially, I think that then kind of cleared the way for other teams in the league to follow suit. And in the end, it's a unanimous decision to hand Brora a title that they've looked on course for some time, let's be honest.
There's already been a sort of acceptance among the other clubs, haven't there, that given the results that Brora had against Locos, one of the results, the last result they had against Fraserburgh, that Brora were the more consistent and the team that also performed in the big games as well.
Yeah, their record this season makes for really impressive reading. They've won 24 out of their 26 league games. They'd already won the North of Scotland Cup. They were in the semi-finals of the Highland League Cup. Did well in the Scottish Cup as well. They ran Morton all the way, took them to a replay with a draw down at Capello. So, you know, there has been a sense for a while now that they're, you know, the team that's most ready to step in and win that title. But I suppose the thing that made it perhaps easier from the point of view of the member clubs was the fact that there was no relegation issue to factor in. That's obviously a complication for how the SPFL are going to go about resolving a lot of the issues that are in front of them in the coming weeks. The fact that Fort William, aren't going to get relegated by sort of virtue of being bottom of the league, meant that there was no consequence of making this call to end the season. But it's certainly a good example of how clubs can, move on and, find a solution when everyone sits down and perhaps puts, their own agendas to the side and agrees on the most constructive way of actually, moving forward and allowing us to sort of put the brakes on this season and the players can now kind of rest up knowing that, when they return to action, it will be for a new season.
I mean, there's obviously been league restructuring been discussed, and obviously one of the options is the three leagues of 14, which would then exclude Sibrora and the winners of the Highland League. I mean, how gutting do you think that would be if that was a scenario that ended up playing out?
Yeah, I mean, Brora have had the ambition to go up for a wee while now. Not for too long. It's worth pointing out that they were in two minds about it the last time they were in the playoffs. You know, that at that stage it was a different regime, and I think a lot of the logistical challenges that were ahead of them, and you know, if they were to have been promoted, put them off slightly. Obviously, their location being kind of best part of 60 miles north of Inverness is something that they've, you know, got to think about when they're going to be making big travelling commitments as part of a, you know, a national league. But over time, I think they've warmed to the idea. They've kind of got a squad that's predominantly Inverness and maybe Dingwall based, you know, a little bit further afield as well, but not that many of them are from Brora itself. So, you know, the actual travelling commitment there wouldn't be massively different from how it is for say Cali Thistle and Ross County players. But there has been this appetite to you know, try and make the most of this opportunity that's now there through the pyramid, and signing a lot of players this season, even the likes of Andrew McCrae, for example, from Forest. When he signed, you know, he mentioned that the lure of trying to, you know, contend for that place in League Two was a major reason why he joined Brora. So, you know, to have had that ambition, you know, driving the club on, and then, you know, doing their bit by winning the league, it would be a real sore one to take if there was to be no opportunity to at least contend for the place by virtue of the you know, the pyramid playoff. But, you know, I guess that in itself is in a bit of uncertainty. You know, we don't know when play is going to be resumed. You know, the chance of, you know, the pyramid actually going ahead is very much in doubt, given that the Lowland League itself hasn't been kind of resolved as well. Kelty are sitting 6 points ahead of Bonnie Rigg Rose as it stands just now, which isn't the same margin of lead that Brora had built up. So, you know, we just need to wait and see what other leagues do now before Brora's potential path towards League Two or otherwise becomes clear.
All right, well, hopefully they get their chance. Andy, as our man in the north, just finally, what was your favourite video this morning? Roy McGregor doing keepy-ups or James Keating's trying to do the shuffle up his stairs?
I have to hand it to Roy. I think that's given us all a bit of an uplift in these times. A lot of the Ross County players have been taking on the keepy-up challenge as a response to Don Cowie, who he did his yesterday, and he kind of pledged that for every member of the Ross County team that takes on the Keep You Up challenge and posts their video online, Don will donate £50 to NHS workers, which was a really nice gesture. So there's been a few videos popping up, you know, among the squad and their social media pages, but I certainly didn't expect to see the chairman, that's for sure.
With 7 Keep You Ups, you could obviously get a game for the Aberdeen Journal's 5-a-side team. Ross County, obviously not the only team. Cali Thistle, Nairn County, Aberdeen, among the others. And there's been loads of them that have used this time to engage in community activities. Anyway, that concludes today's episode of Northern Goal. Should you want to ask us anything, make a point or berate us, or just entertain me during this time off, please get in touch by email at northerngoal@dctmedia.co.uk. Thanks to Danny Law, Jamie Durant, Andy Skinner, and of course, Rachel Corsi for joining me today. Rachel, when will we see a video of you trying to keep you up to the toilet roll in your Utah apartment?
Probably never. I gave that a go once and got 3 and decided that wasn't for me. So I might do some other things. I'm working on my handstand, which also needs a lot more work. But I think that's more possible than toilet roll keep you ups at this point.
All right. Well, if you need any tips on handstands, I'm not your man. Anyway, as I said last week, we'll still be here in the coming weeks and months, however long this lasts, with guest interviews and the latest developments as we have them. So please continue to look out for Northern Goal every Tuesday. If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, stay safe out there. Goodbye.
Hope you loved the episode. And if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.